Hello, loyal listeners. Maggleby here. This week's topic is favorite sensei. We talk about a lot of super cool anime teachers in this episode and have a great time talking about what makes a good teacher and mentor. However, I talk about a teacher from the series Loveless who is noteworthy because of how she helps a young student under her care in a severely abusive home situation. If this is going to be triggering or otherwise difficult to listen to, please feel free to skip minutes 33 through 39 and enjoy the rest of the episode. Again, this is a content warning for minutes 33 through 39. Thank you and enjoy.
Evening, weebs of all walks. This is Byron D Zero, and you are listening to the Weeb Trash Can Podcast. How we doing, guys?
Good.
Pretty good. All right.
So, why don't you two fine folks introduce yourselves?
Mag will be here. What's going on? It's Memorial Day, so we've all had a nice long weekend.
Long and restful.
Oh God.
Camp here, rocking out and. Give me the rundown of the lowdown.
Memorial Day weekend is really gray and ugly out, and I'm nursing a bad back, you know. Just thought I'd give that a little bit of personal information, because I'm getting old.
Yeah, we're all getting old. My knees are gone to shit, so.
I just wiped mine against an oak table a few days
ago. Nice!
I was limping a few days.
Good time.
Bunch of young invalids. Talking about anime.
Invalids of tomorrow.
That actually I hope not. I want to be better tomorrow.
Don't worry, it's an alternate timeline.
Okay.
That actually ties into our topic for tonight, which is anime senseis. Old guys.
Okay, alright, that's a stretch. I was wondering, like, how do invalids tie into sensei? But I guess they saved it there.
Yep, I was a far reach. I'm just like, whatevs. Let's go.
Yeah, whatever. We got it. We segued. That's the important part.
Yes.
Might as well shot in the dark.
All right. So, yeah, anime senseis. Basically, any character in anime that has either taught a character in the series something important, not just fighting style, but like life lessons, served as a mentor. I have a feeling that a lot of our inserts in this episode are going to be fighting teachers. Maybe a few, not so much.
Well, I guess we just want to make sure to say, so there's a difference between sensei and senpai.
Yes.
And I know that can be a point of confusion. Sensei is an authority figure, is a teacher. Sensei means teacher. Senpai is just someone who's older than you and, you know, or more respected than you. Someone who's in charge in some way.
But still a peer.
Yeah, but still a peer. Sensei is specifically a teacher.
Or school. So, yeah, again, like you said, like, they may have taught you something, but then that's not their official capacity. They are not teaching people things, per se.
Yeah, no, sensei is teacher. Like, direct translation. Sensei, yes. Teacher. So.
My entry is Piccolo from Dragon Ball Z. When I think teachers, he was one of, like, my first true sensei characters when I got into anime back in the day. What can I say about him that a lot of people in anime lore don't already know? Like, he started out as Goku's enemy. Like, he is the second coming of one of Goku's most dangerous enemies, Piccolo Daimo, the great demon king. When Daimo was killed, he got punched in the stomach, and he spit out an egg, which was imbued with his very essence. That egg became Piccolo Jr. Fast forward a couple decades, Piccolo Jr. and Goku fight out for a martial arts tournament. Goku beats him. Then we fast forward to Z, where Goku and Piccolo had to fight off against Goku's brother Raditz to save Goku's son. And that is where things start to change. After they defeat Raditz, Piccolo kills Goku. He becomes Gohan's surrogate father, although reluctantly. He's, like, not with it at all. And it's hilarious, like, how reluctant he is the entire time. This was a fun time watching the original dub of this, because it's like, this is the time when, like, they didn't really swear in a lot of U.S. dubs anyway, so it's kind of just like, little brat. And it's just like, you can tell that he wanted to call him a little shit every little step of the way. And, you know, during the training sequences between Piccolo and Gohan, you see hints of him, like, showing how he really feels for the boy. He just, the full scenario is like, up until this point, he's been living up to the name of the demon. Like, he's just been an asshole. He's just been a bad guy. Even, like, before Gohan was born, you saw him, like, saving people during the World War Martial Arts Tournament needlessly. It's like, I remember at the end of Dragon Ball, there was, like, a clock tower being destroyed, and Piccolo just destroyed the clock tower, saving the small family, showing, like, hints of his humanity. Well, his moral fiber, since he's not actually human, but I digress. So, Piccolo had it in him. It just took Gohan to bring it out of him. It took him becoming Gohan's teacher to show him that he could be something better. And you don't really see, like, the full weight of that relationship until the fight between Vegeta and Nappa, where Nappa's about to mouth blast Gohan, and Piccolo, without even thinking, just jumps in and takes the brunt of the blow. And he's dead, and then
he loves his little nerd.
Oh, yes. And from then on out, more so in the movies, which aren't canon, you see more instances of Piccolo showing that, this is my son. You don't ever talk to me and my son again. Like, every cookie-cutter villain in those movies, it's always Piccolo coming in and saying, Kid Gohan, it's like, did you just talk to my son? Oh, you're going to pay for that now. Just, like, beating the hell out of the second-level grunts until the big baddie comes in and beats the shit out of Piccolo. But, yeah, it's had an impact on me, too, because, like, working with kids myself, like, I feel like, even though I can be a little gruff with them sometimes, I feel like the best in me comes out when I'm actually having a teaching moment with a kid. And I guess, in a way, Piccolo's kind of an allegory for life. Like, we can be better if we have some, if we can pass on what we've learned to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm getting a little feels right now thinking about it. So,
I know, he's really good. So, actually, I'm thinking of how much, you know, you're talking about how much Piccolo means to you and in your life and whatnot. I'm remembering the moment in Dragon Ball where Gohan very specifically turns down his father's lineage to where to wear the symbol of his teacher, of
during
Piccolo.
The Cell game.
The Drill House, Tommy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So, in Dragon Ball Z, Goku and, like, all of his friends all wear the same symbol, and it's the symbol of their school, of their trainer.
Yes.
And when he tries to then present Gohan with this same thing, which is a huge, huge, huge thing, it's basically declaring him a competent fighter and someone continuing the lineage of this school. Gohan says, no, like, you didn't teach me. Master Roshi didn't teach me. Piccolo taught me. And I'm going to wear his symbol and his colors.
Yes.
And it's a huge deal.
Yep.
Again, you know, you see the jokes online all the time where it's like, Piccolo's Gohan's dad, and it's like, well,
he totally is!
Yes.
He's so much more of a father to him than he's a father and a teacher and authority figure and a friend. I have a lot of feels about Piccolo and Gohan's relationship as well. It's very good. Although most of my knowledge and feelings come from DBZ Abridged by Team 4 Star.
And to be fair, he's also a pretty good granddad, because you see in Super where he's playing with Pan. He's like,
He is totally, he is so much more of the teacher, but what are parents but caregivers and teachers?
If they're doing their job right.
If they're doing their job correctly, yes. And so he becomes, you know, more than just Gohan's sensei, he becomes Gohan's chosen family.
Absolutely. So, Mark, what is your follow-up for that act?
My follow-up for that act, that's a tough one to top, but I think I'm playing it simple here by going with Bright Noah.
Oh, that's a good one.
the sensei that slaps her right into the face.
Yes, the slap heard around the world.
Yep. He got Amuro back into that Gundam. He got Camille back into place, keep his head for a while, and, well, Judo Ashta was the one that actually avoided the bright slap out of all the pilots.
Wow.
From Double Zeta.
Which Gundam series are you talking about?
He was in the original Gundam, Zeta Gundam, Double Zeta. He was also in Char's Counterattack and Unicorn Gundam.
Okay.
Really? I haven't seen enough of Unicorn Gundam to see where he's in there.
Yeah, he starts off as the de facto captain of the white base when pretty much 3/4 of the crew get wiped out in the initial attack.
Yeah.
Follows that one through the end of the 1-year war. But it gets blown up and the final battle, but everyone escapes at the end. So, he's then, still with the Federation in Zeta Gundam by the time the Titans take over, but he's like an airline captain, but, given the circumstances, he gets pushed into conflict and became the captain of the Argama, which became, like, the go-to guy for that crew.
Wow.
Yeah, he stuck with the Argama up until, Double Zeta, where he transferred over to the Nahal Argama, which is what he later flown in Unicorn.
I find the irony of that a little bit hilarious, because, like, in the Gundam universe, you have the new types, which are, like, they're the guys, or girls, of mm-hmm. this universe, and Bright Noah's just a guy. Like, he's just a person. He's just a normal human.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he doesn't have this affinity for piloting mechs that a lot of these characters do.
Nope.
But he outlives, like, a lot of, like, the
main cast? Yep.
Yes. For that very... And it's like, he's just a normal human. So, that irony is definitely not lost on me.
Though, Banager was the only Gundam pilot he didn't have to bright slap.
Okay, from yes. Gundam
Unicorn.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, he's not a... Yeah, from what I've seen of Unicorn, he's not as much of a brat as some of the other
people. Yeah, he's actually a lot more reasonable, like, and he actually listens to what he has to say without needing to get hit for it.
Well, there you go. So, what about Bright Noah, like, makes him a great sensei to you, though?
What makes him a great sensei is that he was able to, like, lead some refugees from, like, a colony, like, with barely any experience throughout that whole tumultuous war, and still manage to keep most of them alive.
Wow. That just makes me think of the Teddy Roosevelt line, like, some men are born to greatness, and others have greatness thrust upon him.
He definitely had it thrust upon him.
Oh, absolutely. From everything that I can recall about Bright Noah, it's like, he didn't necessarily want to be in that situation, but it's like, there are people in the ship that are counting on me not to get them killed, so mm-hmm. I can step up. If there's anything we can learn from Bright Noah, it's just like, sometimes you don't have a choice in the matter. You need to, when people need you, you need to...
Stand up and get into the action.
Yeah, right on. And is there anything else you want to add to that?
It's just a shame that the bright slap didn't work on his son, Hathaway. Oh. In the manga, he later became a terrorist.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that is a shame. Well, they can't all be winners, can they?
That's true. Bright slap can't work on them all.
So, it sounds like, you know, he's very much a leader. What makes him a teacher? Is that, like, where a good leader is also a good teacher?
Yeah, like, he finds out, like, how to work best with, like, the crew he's given with.
He
finds out, like, their faults and, like, their strengths. And, like, he tries to, like, find ways to work with them to better cope with the situation and survive to the next day.
Very cool.
Yeah, and, like, Gundam is, like, a very militaristic series. So,
yeah.
In any given situation with soldiers, like, your higher-ranking officer is your de facto teacher. They're teaching you things about the battlefield. They're teaching you how to survive. And in that sense, Bright Noah is definitely a teacher because, like, he's had enough experience. Him versus Amuro, where Amuro was just a normal kid whose dad was working on that very mech.
The Gundam.
Yes. And he just happened to be really good at piloting it. He didn't know about military tactics. He didn't know about, like...
strategies.
Exactly.
He just knew how to move it, and that was it.
And it took Bright Noah teaching him what he knows from his military upbringing to make him a soldier.
All right, cool.
And I'm winning one at that.
Very much. So, moving right along.
Yeah, speaking of, I guess, training to be a soldier, I am going to talk about a teacher from Boku no Hero Academia, or My Hero Academia, Shoto Aizawa, otherwise known as Eraserhead.
My homeboy.
This asshole.
Just come up with it when I'm done with my nap.
I love him so much. He's absolutely fantastic because he's very much a tough love teacher.
Yes.
When all the students first, class 1A, first enters into UA and they're told, you know, oh, this is your homeroom teacher, we get a quick little sidebar where you see All Might going, shit!
Of all
like,
people.
My protege is in with this teacher? Like, he'll expel students constantly. He's known for it. If he doesn't think you have what it takes to be a hero, you're gone.
Yeah.
No, like, extra training, no extra chances. You know, he's immediately like, oh, God, no. Like, I've given this kid my power, he needs to be trained, and I want him to be trained in the proper way through school, and he's gonna get expelled because Aizawa hates me, and he hates kids like Midoriya, who seems useless, and he doesn't have full control of his power yet. But the beautiful thing about Eraserhead is he's an incredible hard ass, but he is also very, very good at seeing your potential and knowing whether or not you're going to be able to make it in the hero world. Yes. In this show, it's worth noting that he has not expelled a single student from his class because class 1A, you have all different skill levels, you have all different backgrounds, but all of them have the singular drive and talent to make it in the hero world. And he recognizes that. And he pushes them. And he pushes them. And underneath it all, he, despite his seemingly uncaring manner and his very, very tough, no-nonsense methods, like, he'll lie to the kids to put pressure on them.
Yeah.
Which, you know, generally is not a teaching practice that I would condone, but we're talking about a world where they're going into, you know, they're training to put themselves in mortal danger. So in that case, it works. He's doing what he's doing anything and everything that he needs to do to prepare them for the field. And it's wonderful. And the part that really brings it all together is how much he legitimately cares for his students. He puts in so much more effort than he appears to because he legitimately wants all of these kids to succeed and to survive. He literally fights for them. He, during one of their exams, the villains show up, which should not happen, and he almost dies fighting to protect his kids, and that's a lot because he's super powerful. Like, his quirk is, he's called, his pro hero name was Eraserhead because he can stare at someone and erase their quirk. Doesn't work, it's gone. And he's also, on top of that, he had to go, okay, so great, I've disabled your quirk, but now I need to take you down. He is an incredible fighter. He is incredible fighter. And he always makes sure to take all of his vast experience and pass it on to his students in the physical training, in the quirk training, in the mental and emotional training that it takes to be put in these situations. And he does an amazing job because he really cares. He really gives a shit.
Yes. I would say with Eraserhead, like, he definitely is, like, He's a better hero than All Might as well. Like, he takes his job that seriously. He doesn't care about the spotlight.
Yes. That's another huge thing, is that a lot of people, anybody that he thinks is basically in it for the spotlight is gone.
Yep.
Is gone. 2 seconds.
Absolutely.
And All Might isn't in it for the spotlight, as we find out, but Aizawa really, really looks down on All Might because he sees him as an attention hog, as someone who's doing it for the spotlight, which, as we all know, through looking at him through Midoriya's eyes and hearing All Might talk himself, there's a lot more to it. That's not the story.
Absolutely.
But, you know, Eraserhead has never been a very public hero because he just wants to do his job and make sure that the people he has taken responsibility for, whether it be in the field saving them or in the classroom teaching them, are getting his all.
Yeah.
Another thing that, again, going back to his fighting skills, like, he's basically a ninja in that sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's stealth-based.
Yeah.
He is.
There is a really interesting video on YouTube by Gaijin Goomba talking about how he basically is a ninja, going from his stealthiness and, like, and I feel in that sense he's on par with, like, some of the ninja teachers from Naruto, but again, rambling. But yeah, it's just, that's a good thing to teach his students with it, about being a hero. It's like, sometimes you can't just go in full force. Sometimes you have to think 2 steps ahead, which is, like, what a ninja traditionally does.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's another huge part of what makes him such a good, well-rounded teacher, is that he's smart. He's very smart.
Yeah.
And he teaches his students, you know, not just the grit part, but the caution part, the intelligence part. He does, in anything where they're being tested, he always makes sure that a part of their test is him trying to trick them, pulling some sort of maneuver on them so that they can see, oh, I thought you were coming from this way, but he's actually coming from this side. And his fighting skill set really does lend itself to the sort of ninja aspect, as well as his capture system, his scarf, that responds to his thoughts, his commands, his movements, allows him to kind of swing around or to grab someone out of nowhere. And it all works very well with the stealth aspect.
One more thing I want to add. This is going to be a bit of a spoiler if you're not caught up on My Hero Academia. But as of this recording, one of the most recent episodes, it was during a training camp invasion. One of the students gets captured. Not going to say who. Everybody knows who it is. But yeah, he gets captured.
I'm so concerned for my boy!
Yes. And Aizawa doesn't hesitate to make an appearance to atone for their failings as teachers.
Oh yeah, no, we briefly mentioned before that he hates people in the spotlight, and that has led him to being, he never appears on TV. He hates television appearances. He hates having his name in the paper, and he is on a very, like, he's on a news outlet, an incredibly public thing, and he allows himself to be the face of the responsibility for the school's failing.
Yes.
And that's huge. Like, the students see him on a jumbotron out in public and immediately go, what's happening? He hates being on TV, and watch him stand up. He's a very unkempt person.
Yes.
He doesn't care about his appearance. He cares about his job. And he's looking presentable. He's in a suit and he has his hair slicked back and he's clean shaven, and he steps up and he takes responsibility for the losing of this student. And it's probably not intended to be a lesson, but it's a lesson, and it shows how much he cares, that he's taking responsibility for something that honestly wasn't really his fault, you know? He tried his best. He did everything he possibly could have done. He bent the rules a little bit to allow the students to defend themselves, which was in their best interest, and ended up working out for the best. A lot more people would have been hurt or killed if
Absolutely.
They, if he hadn't done the things that he had done, but he, you know, he gets up there and he says, this is my fault and we're doing everything we can. And he says that to the world.
And that had to have been a really humbling experience for his character.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right, so those are our mainline entries. So I guess I'll just start with my runner-ups. My first one, lesser-known character from One Piece, Silver's Rayleigh. He was Luffy's sensei going into the second half of the series. His backstory is he was the first mate to the original Pirate King Gold Roger. And enough time passed. He's living a nice, quiet life, working on ships, helping them to essentially go underwater to go to Mermaid Island. He meets Luffy, and through a series of very devastating events in Luffy's own life, he ends up becoming his teacher, teaching him the martial art of Haki, which Rayleigh explains to him is going to be essential in order to survive the second half of the Grand Line to get the one, to gain the One Piece. And he sees something in Luffy that he saw in Gold Roger. That is why he's one of my runner-ups. Another runner-up would have to be Hitake Kakashi from Naruto. Because
Kakashi-sensei!
Oh, yeah. He's
I don't watch Naruto. I really don't. Honestly, the fandom turned me off before I could really give it a chance. But I love Kakashi-sensei! He's so good!
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of things that I feel like he was a lot of things that were put into his character. Some of them were like composited from like characters like Kakashi.
Mm-hmm.
He's very big on tough love.
Mm-hmm.
He has an ability for reading his students, see what brings out the best in them. He's even had moments like being able to see like when a student's going down a wrong path, like Eraserhead has, and anything else I can say about him is kind of common knowledge in anime culture, so I don't need to say anything more about him.
He's a good sensei, and he does right by, you know, his kids. He's a teacher for a reason.
Absolutely. How about you, Mechanical?
Well, my runner-up, I was thinking Master Roshi.
Yes!
He has to be mentioned at some point.
Absolutely.
He has to.
Yep.
We did briefly mention him.
Briefly, but
but not for himself.
No, that was more for, like, just as a reference for Piccolo.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the Turtle Hermit, master of the Kamehameha Wave.
Yes.
He trained Goku and Krillin on Turtle Island. Oh, that was good, Dragon Ball.
Oh, yes, that was
a good story arc.
Oh, absolutely.
God damn it. He was a good teacher, but a terrible person.
Yeah. He's undeniable.
He's such a perv.
And if you've seen enough of Dragon Ball, you know that he was an even worse student than he was a person.
Oh, I bet.
Oh, you have no idea.
I don't have any idea. I don't necessarily. I know the creepy old man he turned out to be.
Well, he's always been a pervert, though.
He's always been a creepy old man, even when he was a kid.
Yes, he was.
Ugh.
A creepy young scamp. Became a creepy old man.
Yeah.
But damned if he doesn't know his martial arts.
Yeah.
Right on.
And it's, again, he does that tough love. We've talked a lot about, you know, tough love senseis of people who teach others how to fight and how to survive. And adding on to that line, I would like to mention Izumi Curtis from Full Metal Alchemist.
Yes!
The ultimate tough love teacher. She basically adopts these two orphan boys and immediately sees the talent that they have and the trauma that they've been through. And does not forgive them for what they've done, but allows them to learn from it.
Absolutely.
And she always, you know, takes care of them, their children, But she by no means coddles them. She says, look, you've already seen what life has to offer, and you're heading down a tough path, so I'm going to get you ready. I know that you can handle what I'm throwing at you. And when you come back with a broken arm or a scraped up knee, I'll fix it up for you, and then you're going to go back out there. And she's in a very unique position to understand what they've done and what they've gone through, because both these children and her gave up vital parts of themselves out of love to try and do human transmutation. Izumi Curtis lost a part of her internal organs trying to bring back her stillborn child.
Yeah.
And the boys lost an arm and a leg, an entire body, trying to bring back their mother through human transmutation. And so she's able to immediately see, oh my goodness, these children are incredibly powerful and cannot be left alone. But she also sees the deep sense of love and loss that brought them to this point, and really takes them under her wing and does everything she can to make sure that they don't make further mistakes that she has made. They've already made the biggest mistake that she ever made.
Yeah,
the big taboo.
The big taboo, but she does everything that she can to say, all right, you guys have had a taste of the worst that the world has to offer, but it's only a taste, so let me prepare you for the rest of it. And she manages to do that without ever stifling their senses of self or their childlike wonder or curiosity, you know? So it's, she's a rock star teacher. Izumi Sensei is absolutely wonderful. And a quick second runner-up is a very little-known character who actually, when we're coming into the other aspect of teaching, not the tough love, but the straight, like, young kid caring. So, I have a confession. I love Loveless. Ignore the anime. The anime is terrible. Ignore the anime. The anime is terrible. Fucking ignore the anime. The anime is terrible.
So should we avoid the anime?
Maybe. Yeah. Avoid the anime. I got sucked into the manga. I love the manga. The anime really plays up this incredibly creepy pedo vibe that is there in the manga, but it's only kind of there if you squint. The anime takes it and makes it like, here, this is inappropriate and creepy, and I hate it. I hate it. But, so, the teacher in this is, Hitomi Shinonome, Shinonome Sensei, and the main character, Ritsuka, is an elementary school student. And his home life is in absolute shambles. We come in few years after his older brother was horrendously murdered. And at that point, his mother, who had always had kind of unstable and violent tendencies, completely snapped, and his older brother wasn't around to protect him anymore. So Ritsuka is constantly being very badly abused, constantly getting beat up at home, getting emotionally and physically abused. It's a very, very bad situation. And this manifests both as him coming into school covered in bandages, but it also manifests in a complete withdrawing into himself. When he was younger, his report cards and his teachers always talked about how friendly he was, how outgoing he was, how, you know, he was an okay student, but he was a kid and he was a happy kid. And he's turned into an incredible student who does not talk to anybody. He is incredibly withdrawn, which again is a huge, big flashing red warning sign of abuse. So Shinonome Sensei is the only adult in his life who sees these things and actually tries to do something about it. All his other teachers in school, all her colleagues tell her to ignore it, to leave it alone. It's something that's happening in the home. But she legitimately cares about her students, about their overall welfare on top of their education. And she goes against what everyone tells her and works to get involved to make sure that her students are okay. And she gets involved in every aspect of their lives that it is, you know, appropriate for a teacher to get involved in. And she sees something wrong with one of her kids, with one of her students, and she's the only, like I said, the only adult in his life who actually does something about it. Or tries to. The manga's been on hiatus for a while, and it still hasn't really been resolved, but she's the embodiment of the teacher that I always aspired to be working in early childhood education. I have a strong education background, and while we're all talking about adults and high school and the tough love aspect of, you know, preparing them for the world, you can't really use that with really, really little kids, with elementary school and preschool. They need to know safety, and they need to know comfort, and they need those things in order to learn and to thrive. And for a lot of people out there, school is the only safe place that they have. Yep. And I learned this, and it's something that you always know, but it's something that I witnessed firsthand during my student teaching, working in a school with a teacher who really, really cared and really gave a shit and, you know, took me aside day one and said, these are my children. And this is, for a lot of people, for a lot of them, school lunches are the only good meal that they get. Coming into school and being in my classroom is the only positive adult, you know, interaction that they get. And if you're doing something that's going to jeopardize that, I'm going to address it immediately. And it's another very, very important aspect of being a teacher and caring about your students. And in order to best do that for really little kids, you have to let them know that they are loved and they are cared for and they are safe. And that is what Hitomi Shinonome in Loveless does. And she is honestly the only adult character in that series who does. And it's pretty incredible.
All right. Well, that is definitely a lot to process, but
wow.
It's important. Yeah, if that doesn't show you the importance of a teacher in someone's life, I don't know what will. I mean, every character that we've mentioned tonight has played more than a singular role in a character's life. Because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, all the teachers aren't just teaching their students like how to do one thing. They're trying to help them become better people in one way or another.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
From Piccolo to Kakashi to Hitomi, Bright Noah. They all see something in their student. They're not just doing it because it's a job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and both in anime and in real life, you know, a truly good teacher who's truly invested in their students is so important, is so good. And there are so many, both in anime and in real life, apathetic teachers out there.
Tell
and
me
it's
about it.
It's tragic. And the mark of a really good teacher is someone who can change your life. And I feel like we've all had, in real life, you know, an adult figure, whether it's a teacher in school or a favorite, you know, aunt or uncle or something. Everyone should have one very strong role model in their life who teaches them not just 2 + 2, but also teaches them about themselves and how to survive in the world.
Yes.
And that's why, you know, this topic was actually a very last minute decision. And the people who were available tonight didn't have any time to, like, research, and we didn't need it.
Not at all.
Improv, baby.
We didn't need the time to prepare, because it's the kind of subject where you're watching something and you see yourself or someone you respect reflected in it, and it sticks with you.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know what they say, it takes a village. And
yeah. Yep.
What better example than having a teacher who has planted that seed to make you a better person?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, one of my own high school teachers, Richard Uzzle, great man. I wouldn't be half the writer that I am today if it weren't for him.
Mm-hmm. I'm really glad that you said that, because I was actually just about to bring up the, like, the teachers who meant so much to me is my elementary school teachers, Mr. Robbins in third grade and Mr. Torres in fifth grade, saved my life, honestly. They are in a huge way responsible for the person that I grew up to be.
I really wish I hadn't taken so many hits to the head growing up so I can remember their names today.
Well, hopefully they're weaving themselves and they're listening and they're shedding a tear of pride.
Hopefully.
Yes. Hey, I'm proud of you if no one else is, Mark. This is Byron D. Zero. I hope you have enjoyed tonight's episode. A little bit of a feels trip. Ja matana.
Maggleby, bringing the feels for another week, because it's what I do. If I'm going to cry, you're going to cry, damn it. That's right, cry, bitch. Till next week, friends.
Oh, it's been a great session with you guys here, and this is Mechanical saying, Arewa Zaku desu.